You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Kingston, Ontario since 1922. Find and follow us on Instagram at CFRC Music. Coming up on this special community takeover of our airwaves, we're talking to Florence Campbell and Nancy Corrigan, past chair and co-chair, respectively, of Compassionate Communities Kingston. Created in 2017 to bring the global Compassionate Communities movement to Kingston, the group inspires intergenerational compassion by providing older adults with knowledge, connection, and support, promoting vitality, purpose, and a sense of well-being. They are mobilizing citizens to help provide knowledge and information on services available to anyone in need. Their goal is to create a culture that readily asks for and accepts help, and to create a community capable of offering and providing help.
So I'm here with CFRC 101.9 FM, and this afternoon I am joined by two individuals for a community takeover of our airwaves. So I have Florence and Nancy here from Compassionate Communities Kingston. Florence and Nancy, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I thought we could start with both of you introducing yourselves, telling us who you are. Florence, you've been involved since the inception of the organization, so perhaps we can start with you.
My name is Florence Campbell. I've been in Kingston now 34 years, and I came here as a VP at Queen's for a while, and then decided to stay in Kingston in retirement. And I've always been involved in community work. It's a passion of mine, given I grew up in rural Alberta, and our parents were very devoted to community leadership, and I guess that's where this comes from. So I have always done a lot of volunteer work, mostly often in the healthcare and not-for-profit sector. And then in 2017, I was invited to a conference in Ottawa, an international public health conference, at which they included a relatively new to Canada subject of compassionate communities. And Compassionate Communities is part of an international organization that started in Australia over 30 years ago, then went to the UK, and then finally came to Canada. Ottawa started Compassionate Ottawa and wanted me to get involved there, and I couldn't really because I'd been gone from Ottawa too long. So I thought, I wonder if we can get this going in Kingston. And so we did. So we started with the steering committee in 2017, and then in a couple of years got not-for-profit status, and then charitable status in 2020, and then changed from a steering committee to a board of directors. So that's how we all got started.
And you are now the past chair?
Yes. After 8 years, I thought in January, nobody should stay much longer than that period of time because you need new ideas all the time. And so I was fortunate that Nancy Corrigan, who's here, and Tom Harris took the reins of co-chairs. Turned out to be a good idea, too, given my accident this March. So they've been board members for some time, know the organization well, and will do a really good job, and they will bring new ideas.
And Nancy, may I ask, how did you get involved? Why were you interested in this organization and becoming a co-chair?
Well, Florence found me, and Florence is great at finding people and ensuring that they help contribute as well. I have worked for the past 30 years as a communication strategist working with clients in healthcare, education, and research. And so one of my clients was the Canadian Hospice Palliative Care Association, where I was involved in setting up advanced care planning communications materials. Florence will talk about this more later, but advanced care planning is really about understanding and communicating your wishes for care should you be unable to speak for yourself. So really knowing who out there could speak for you and ensuring they know what your wishes are. So some time ago, I believe somewhere in around 2016, we started the first National Advanced Care Planning Day. So I was involved in that and in developing materials for people, workbooks and things. Florence then learned that I was her neighbor and invited me to join the board as well to work on this. And since then, I've really enjoyed working with Florence and the other board members on everything from advanced care planning, but also other compassionate communities projects that we have, such as talking cafes and community connectors.
Nancy is an extremely experienced communicator, and we're really, really lucky to have her.
Now that we've introduced you, perhaps we could give listeners a bit more information about what Compassionate Communities is. So Florence, as you've mentioned, this is a group or an organization that exists elsewhere but has been established in Kingston since 2017. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the history and the mission and what services your organization offers.
Mm-hmm. We are totally volunteer-driven, a charitable organization. And our objective, we focus on older adults, help us all live as well as we can for as long as we can. We don't provide any health care. We're volunteers. We're not qualified to be health professionals. So we focus on three themes: education, information, and connections. So in other words, how do we live as well as we can for as long as we can? And how does this organization provide education, information, and connections for tools to help us do just that? And we have four programs, two of which are in information and education, and two are in connections. So I'll speak to the first two first, and then Nancy then will both talk about the fourth one. So the first one, is, as she said, is advanced care planning, and that is really our foundational project. Who will speak for you if you can't speak for yourself? And how do you plan for potential future care needs? 80% of Canadians feel that we all should have an advanced care plan, but fewer than about 30% have done anything about it. So we've now put about 1,000 Kingstonians through this program over the last 7 or so years. And so we have a long way to go because there's all this population that has not given it any thought. And most of the people who come to these sessions are older adults. We would really love it if their children, the next generation, would see the need. But when you're 45 years old, you're not really thinking about this stuff. But every age after maturity should be thinking about this. So people are very grateful to attend these sessions. It's very gratifying as a volunteer to provide this service. And we hear things like, I thought I had it all in place, but I've learned so much today. Because they learn from the materials that we have and the presentations, and they learn from other participants who ask questions and exchange ideas. Some people come and say, I'm not sure why I'm here. I have my husband. But both of them are 85 years old, and they haven't done anything about thinking about an alternate. Or, I have a will. Well, I say wills are for when you're dead. We're here to talk about how do you live as well as you can for as long as you can. And you would not believe the stories we hear about elder abuse and about problems in the ICU with families who have done any planning and they're at the end of life. So it makes so much sense to have a good plan. We can't plan for everything, but what we encourage people to do is get a first plan in place. You can change it 6 months from now if your circumstances change or you want to make changes. And do you think it's a good idea to have a substitute decision maker and an alternate, or more than one substitute decision maker? And how do you choose? The most important thing of all, of course, is trust. So that's advanced care planning. And we do them in the library and we do them in the senior center. We've done them in some apartment buildings and condos. We'd go to book clubs. We'd go anywhere if an organization would like us to come and give an advanced care planning seminar. That's part of the theme of education and information. The other one is information and connections. It's called our Community Connectors. And we've trained about 300 citizens to be Community Connectors. And what that means is it's not very onerous at all. It means a lot of people don't know how to navigate the system. They have no idea what to do when they need some kind of service, whether it's financial or exercise or social. And we provide them with a card that has 7 databases or 7 community directories on them. And we teach them how to use these 7 different directories. And so if they run across a neighbor or a family relative who doesn't know where to turn, they can provide information to them. Now, they're not to solve the problems. They're interested citizens in helping people navigate the system. And so that program's been going for about 3 years now. And we're trying to spread information about what's available so that more and more people know where to go when they need information. So that's advanced care planning and community connectors. The next theme, of course, is connections. And we're trying to tackle socialization and loneliness. And so Nancy's going to talk about our talking cafes.
Yeah, so we know that social isolation is a big problem among all ages, but certainly among older adults who may face barriers getting out, may have financial barriers. So we've developed something called Talking Cafes, and this is a program that is certainly around. There are other compassionate communities groups doing this as well. We designed ours primarily for older adults who really want to find a social connection but don't really know how, or maybe can't afford to join a particular group or a club, but they want to be able to engage in conversation. So ours are free, they're welcoming, they're very lightly facilitated. People can talk about whatever they want to talk about. They're usually a small group, so it's not intimidating. It's, you know, getting together around some cookies and coffee and having discussion. It could be about hobbies, it could be about problems that people are experiencing, or how to belong. We had a very funny one at one of the beginning talking cafes where somebody was looking for a haggis for Robbie Burns Day, and someone knew where to find one. So, you know, it is amazing what happens. Often they're held, so we have some great partners. Lawrence has mentioned the library and the senior center, and the talking cafes, we collaborate with the Frontenac Public Libraries and also Kingston Community Health Centers, because they do some programming around it. So the library does an Aging Well series. And so what we'll often do is tie those together. So they'll have a guest speaker, and afterwards we'll have a talking cafe. So people can sit down and maybe talk about the speaker or about anything at all. So we find it's a way for people to get out. They may just have a conversation and that's it. But often we see people return, and the same people return, or they create friendships or a way to help each other. It's kind of a more in-person extension of our community connectors in a way, because these people, as they speak to each other and as they go to the speaking series, they learn about what's available and they can help each other. So it's wonderful. We've done over 50 now. They're growing in popularity as people know about them. So it's very organic. We do keep it very casual, so people feel comfortable coming. And holding it in places such as Kingston Community Health Center or the library makes it free and welcoming. You know, that's already a public space. We already know the library is one of those, you know, third spaces in the community where people feel comfortable going. So this is a great opportunity for people to help themselves.
I should tell you about one of the very first talking cafes I did at the library. It turns out that several of the participants had only been in Kingston about 16 months to 2 years. Most of them older adults retired here because children are here. And they were looking for best bakery and the best this and the best that. And then there were four of them who stood talking afterwards in the front lobby. And I ran into one of them a couple of years later at the Grand Theater, and she said four of them were still friends. And that is ideal. That's exactly what we're looking for. It doesn't always happen, obviously. But I was really pleased to hear that.
I know in my personal experience, when you talk about planning, my father passed away and he still had his mother. He was the sole caregiver for his mother. And so in addition to the planning that my family had to do, I ended up stepping in and taking over the care of my grandmother. And it was completely unexpected. And the months of work with lawyers and banks, and that process was so complicated and very difficult for everyone involved. My grandmother's will still had her husband, who had died 20 years prior. So I think I certainly, listening to this, think of what a wonderful opportunity it is for people to talk about those questions that you don't even know that you have, or you don't know where to start.
You're the perfect person to come to one of our sessions. And we don't do them in the summer. Nobody's interested. You know, they're at the lake or the cottage. But our first one will be, we do them the third Monday of the month at the Senior Center from 4:30 to 6. So all you've got to do is register at the Senior Center, and they're all free. So I would expect to see
them. Oh, it's good to know, because, I mean, my mother is still around. And
you're
so
the perfect age. You can be a proponent.
Yeah,
you can be a salesperson for this age group.
Once that happened, we put in place a lot of things for my mom. So I have power of health and power of attorney if and when that time comes. You know, she's 80 and she's still living on her own. But it was the reassurance of knowing that we wouldn't be going through that again, I think.
So who's your powers of attorney for you?
My siblings. Yeah, we...
All of them?
There's an order to it.
They have to not fight. That's
yes, have them in an if-then kind of spreadsheet.
It's interesting, though, you mentioned the generational thing, because one of the other things that we did as part of our outreach, because we wanted to figure out how to reach people in the community. So St. Lawrence College, their marketing master's program, has a really great group of people, and they take on projects. And so they took us on as a project, and it was interesting. There were a lot of international students in this particular class, and it resonated with them because they all said, we have grandmothers back home and we have nobody here. Mm-hmm. And it made us realize, yes, older adults face this, but that social isolation amongst university and college students is something as well. People who have come from elsewhere and don't have that family connection, you know, how do they find those supports in the community? Mm-hmm. So it's equally important. In fact, they actually talked about creating a sort of a compassionate communities St. Lawrence group, which is something that we'd like to explore in the future.
One of the things that I noticed on your website was just the conversation about the goal of encouraging people to seek help and the discussion around a discomfort.
I should have mentioned that right in the outset, and we got into activities. Yeah, we have a goal that is twofold. One is, as you've just brought up, as individuals, we are extremely reluctant to ask for or accept help. So that if you ask me for help, I'm likely to say, no, thank you, I'm fine. So that's a big, big problem. And whenever I say that in advanced care planning workshops, I see heads nodding, you know, you got me, you know. One husband blurted out, my wife's been after me about that. I've changed recently because I had a big accident and a broken hip. So I have become much more readily acceptance of help. And that's been very interesting. People are extremely willing to help. And sometimes they don't know what to say or how to help. And we have tools for that too. The other side of the coin is, the other part of the goal is that if you offer to help me and I keep turning you down, you're going to lose confidence in knowing how to help. You'd like to help as a community member or neighbor or whatever. You really want to help. And so you'll probably say, well, let me know if there's anything I can do. And that goes nowhere. It's like, say, we should have coffee sometime. And I've noticed in my own experience in the last 2 months, when somebody says to me, let me know if there's anything I can do, I typically don't call them if I've got another way of going about it. Or other people say, I'm bringing dinner to you. Which night would you like it? That's much more precise and helpful. So I've learned all of that through this experience as well. So that goal is what guides us. And throughout our programs that we talk about, we try to insert that goal so that people become aware of. That was research done some years ago about one of the founding principles or goals of compassionate communities.
We talked a little bit, or we have been talking about some of the activities that you do together. So you mentioned there's a bit of a pause in the summertime, but otherwise this is monthly conversations. How often do the talks happen?
They happen usually a couple times a month.
So there's lots of opportunity then for individuals to reach out. And even if you're away at the cottage this summer and it's not in your head, maybe something to keep in mind for the fall when you're back and, you know, have a little bit more time.
And of course, our partners, you know, the library, Kingston Community Health Centers, they run all kinds of programs as well, you know, that are really complementary to what we offer. And so there's lots out there. Again, it's sort of, you know, the community connectors, knowing what's out there and how to help people find those connections.
And the other project that has to do with connections was social prescribing. Have you heard of social prescribing?
I have not.
It is relatively new, although it is now rapidly expanding in Canada. Social prescribing is done by healthcare professionals, and it is treating a person as a whole person and not just a cluster of symptoms. So in other words, doctors give medical prescriptions, and now the whole approach is social prescriptions as well, treating the whole person. Because only about 50% of the time when you go to a doctor do you need a medical prescription. Usually it's often for something else. And so it's to get to the bottom of what is really the issue. And the best way to describe social prescribing is through a story that I heard. And that is that an elderly man, he went to the eMERGE 6 times with heart problems. And they couldn't find any. And then in the doctor's offices, they have what they're called health connectors. And we'll tell you a bit about that because we got a major grant in Kingston to do research on this. They sent a health connector out to the house to try and get to the bottom of it after all these 6 expensive tests. And the health connector found that the couple, all their married lives, had sat on a sofa after dinner, chatting about the day, holding hands and what was going well, or maybe solving arguments, who knows. And recently they couldn't get out of the sofa, so they were sitting at the kitchen table. And his anxiety levels were through the roof. The solution was a new sofa, social prescribing. Another example is of a doctor in Montreal who prescribed a puppy of choice for exercise and companionship. There are hundreds of examples where this is now taking place. So we were fortunate to get a major gift grant from the W.J. Henderson Foundation about 4 years ago now, I guess, to do research at Queen's on how to implement and how to evaluate social prescribing. So that research is now completed, and then some of the medical professionals at the Queen's Family Health teams implemented social prescribing with some patients. And what they found was a major, major emphasis on financial. People don't know how to fill out forms. They don't pay their income tax, therefore they can't apply for Ontario support, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a learning process, but now there's a Canadian Association of Social Prescribing. There are other universities that are doing things. So we were at the front end of it, a little bit ahead of our time, actually, on this. But this research and the experience has provided a foundation now from which to go forward. And we're in the process of researching another specific project in the community. That's social prescribing, treating the whole person as a whole person. As one of my friends said, you know, I'm not just a hip and a knee.
Yeah, it's very true. And I think if you've gone through life not being used to saying or even thinking about what you need and just, you know, head down, push through, or I should know this by now and I'm too embarrassed to ask, I think having an opportunity to relate to people who can say, you know what, I'm in the same boat, I miss this too, or I'm also struggling with this is incredibly valuable. And I'd be very interested to see how this develops and how this gets implemented. But it's also, I think, important for people to know and valuable to know that that is starting to be implemented at healthcare settings as well, and perhaps might encourage someone to say, you know, I have been feeling anxiety, or this is off.
And the Kingston Community Health Center does it too.
So we've talked about some of the activities you do and some of the community groups that you're involved with. If people are listening and they want to take advantage of this, they are interested in getting involved, can you mention where they can find out information?
Our website, of course, compassionatekingston.ca, has a place where you can actually connect with us and fill out a form if you're interested in joining us as a volunteer or getting involved with one of our programs. We've just started a podcast as well. You can find it on iTunes and Spotify. It's called Community Connections. So if you look up Compassionate Kingston Community Connections, you can listen to our podcast. We interview people who are making a difference in our community. So really have some great guests, really good conversations. We have a monthly newsletter that goes out, and it really does look at different resources that are out there. We try to highlight some of the events that are coming up so people know about some of our events as well as some other events in the community. We also provide information on resources that people may be able to access as well. So that's another great way to get in touch with us.
And you mentioned volunteers. What kind of roles do you have for volunteers? Is this something that you're regularly recruiting for?
We would like people to become more involved in helping us facilitate advanced care planning sessions. We would like more people to become community connectors. We do hold training programs. That will happen again in the fall. And that is really just a one-hour session where people, you know, sort of learn what a community connector is, and then they can go forth and be one, basically.
I think also we need facilitators for talking cafes.
And for talking cafes as well. Yeah, so people want to get involved with some of our events that we hold. We provide the training, and that we always provide the support. There's always someone there from the board or from our group. So those are ways that people get involved. Another way, too, is to work with us to coordinate a program in your community. So let's say you're in an apartment building and you would like to have us come and talk to some of your neighbors. or work. Maybe you belong to an organization in town and you think it would be great for your colleagues to be able to learn more about advanced care planning or about talking cafes. So that's another great way for people to get involved, to say, you know, I'd love to coordinate something for my group or my charitable group or any kind of social organization.
What about other ways that individuals can support the work that you're doing? Do you accept donations?
For the most part, in the past, we have had government support from the province of Ontario and from the federal government, and we've had grants from other charitable organizations or foundations. So we haven't done any individual fundraising. We've just stayed away from that because so far that could change. There's such a demand for every organization out looking for money. And so we've tried to avoid adding to that. But perhaps in the future, we'll have to change our mind.
I know it's always a struggle when you have to look for alternate means of funding. And I think it's lovely, obviously, as you've mentioned, partnerships with groups where you aren't paying for the facility space.
There's another partnership that we haven't talked about that's really critically important, and that's with the Community Foundation. I'm an honorary life member there because I was on that board many years ago for some time. But they have a project now, a whole section of the foundation called Older Adults Connections and Belongings. And they are trying to get as many organizations as possible in the community that are involved with older adults to collaborate, to start minimizing duplication of and sharing ideas and so on and so on. So this Older Adults Connections and Belonging group is critical to help various organizations collaborate. And that's going well. We're very pleased to be part of that.
Well, that's fantastic. Often older populations can be an overlooked and underappreciated part of the population. And I mean, I've worked with nonprofits and volunteer organizations most of my career. And I would say most of the volunteers are older, retired individuals. And you see like how much passion and knowledge and value that they bring. And so I think it's really wonderful to have services that
give back as well.
That brings up another challenge.
A portion of our conversation was cut off by a phone call in the background. What we were discussing in this section was the drop in the number of volunteers and the number of volunteer hours. Francis noted that formal volunteering
through organizations dropped from 41 to 32%. Total hours falling by 18%. Downward trend represents a loss of millions of hours of community support. Informal volunteering, which is spontaneous neighborly help and community involvement, dropped from 74% to 66%. And the third part of it is what's called sector impact. Half of Canadian charities report not having enough volunteers to meet rising demands for services. So that's a big national challenge. And it's a challenge in Kingston too, because people are not so easily interested in being long-term, 2-3 year commitments like boards of directors. They'd rather do a short-term project, knowing the timetable in and out. And unfortunately, the oldest generation had done their bit and they are now not as engaged naturally. Next generation is not taking up the charge. Two people working, time commitments. Life is different. It's a big challenge.
I was just reading the Ontario Nonprofit Survey from 2025, and they were saying the drop in funding and the drop in volunteer hours combined is the worst it's ever been. That's just a perfect storm.
Percentage of taxpayers who used to donate was 25%. And that's not a lot, but that's what it was a few years ago. I don't know what the number is now.
Yeah,
everybody's feeling that financial strain.
Absolutely.
And especially the younger generation doesn't have the job security that the older generation has had.
Thank you to both of you. It's been a pleasure talking to you. It's been really informative for me, finding out some of what you do and then also finding out both the need in the community and also the response that's been in the community, which I think is really heartening. I think if you're listening and you're thinking, well, maybe this might be helpful, even if it's just the slightest amount, I would really encourage people to check it out, sitting in on a conversation. There's a lot of empowerment, as I'm sure you know, obviously, to taking control and knowing with more confidence what comes next.
We really appreciate the opportunity to raise awareness of the work that we're trying to do.
Wonderful. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Sign up now to take over CFRC's airwaves yourself. CFRC 101.9 FM invites all Queen's University student groups and Kingston community organizations to take over our airwaves. Join us on air for an hour to talk about your student group or community organization, and also present your own playlist of fun music chosen by your team. This is a great opportunity to talk about what your group does, how others can get involved or provide support, any big events your group has coming up, and how to keep up with the latest news about your group. Apply by visiting cfrc.ca/contact and selecting Apply for a Club Community Takeover. This project is made possible through the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Radio Meters program.